This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. We are finally in the month of June, and we all know what that means. That's NBA Finals time, at least earlier this month than most other months because they changed the schedule around. But it's going to be a really, really fun show. We've got a lot to talk about with this NBA Finals matchup. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
Whoa. I thought we're doing the NHL Stanley Cup.
What is the Stanley Cup?
San Jose and Pittsburgh.
Is Sidney Crosby still playing?
Yeah, he's still playing. Cousin Matt is now goalie for the Pittsburgh Penguins. San Jose, known choke artist. We're not talking hockey today.
They got a lot of Murrays out there. They got two in the draft, Jamal and DeJounte, right?
Yes.
So there's a Matt Murray. That's like the most goaliest name of all time for an American goalie, huh?
Oh, well, he's Canadian.
Oh, he's a Canadian named Matt Murray.
Yes.
Well, that fits for you because you want to move to Canada, like we all know. Even though the Canadian team did not make the NBA Finals, obviously, from the Eastern Conference Finals matchup that they had between Cleveland and Toronto, we'll just go ahead and just kind of kick that off with just kind of a little talking about the Conference Finals matchups. Let's just go ahead and just start a little bit about the East. What did you think in general now that Cleveland has conquered the Toronto Raptors, we the North's 4-2 in a 6-game series there?
Well, that's basically, the home court advantage is huge for some teams, like as we saw with Portland and Toronto. We sort of expected, all right, they might win one, might be 4-1, won't be close, but Toronto really, they did more than I think anybody expected.
Their home court was a lot stronger than I expected. When they had dropped those two game ones they had against Indiana and Miami, I was just thinking, they're going to drop one to Cleveland in 3 or 4, and it just didn't happen. And, you know, they looked really good in Game 3. Cleveland had, like, their worst shooting game of the postseason by far. And then in Game 4, I thought Cleveland actually played pretty well. LeBron played really well. But Toronto, DeRozan had 32, Lowry had 35 and made some huge shots. Biombo was a force. Valanciunas came back for Games 5 and 6. But by that time, you know, in Game 6 at home for Toronto, the writing was already on the wall. And I kind of felt like in the back of their heads they were thinking, even if we win this one, we're going to get slaughtered in Game 7. And there was just a little bit of give up.
It wasn't that it was good. That's all they, you know, they were injured. Valanciunas came back, but he wasn't 100%. Damari Carroll didn't look healthy at all in any of the
Carroll playoffs. Got abused so badly by LeBron James, they put James Johnson on him, which I didn't understand the move by Dwayne Casey. But well, when you're desperate, you do what you got to do.
It's not his fault. You take the healthy body over the 70%, you know, whatever Carroll was giving you. But It was just surprising. A healthy Cleveland team actually stumbled.
And then let's talk a little bit about that epic Western Conference Finals. Where would you put that in your pantheon? You know, we got Lakers, Kings, let's try to limit it to Conference Finals because there's been some great conference semis and first round series like last year with the Spurs and the Clippers. But let's just talk about Conference Finals. I just mentioned the Lakers and the Kings in 2002. They had, I'm kind of drawing a little bit of a blank here, Miami and Boston 2012. But where would you put this one where Golden State overcame a 3-1 deficit to save their historic season and eliminate a really red-hot Thunder team?
Well, I wouldn't put it that high because how many of those games were actually competitive? The first 5 games were all like not either blowouts or the score was close, but it wasn't really competitive.
Well, with the high scoring that's expected, I mean, that happened a lot with the Showtime Lakers, where games were close, but by the fourth quarter, they would blow you out in a game that was close for almost the entire way, seemed like it was out of hand. So, like, for example, the Warriors won Game 5, like, 120 to 111, but that game was pretty close for most of the game.
It was close, but it didn't seem like it was a lead. You know, some leads like, okay, they're going to, like, usually Toronto. All right, they're going to salt it away. They're going to lose it. They're going to start missing shots. But it was just, like, none of the games were super, like, there weren't really nail-biter games. And with the exception of, like, you know,
Game 6, Oklahoma City
blowing it. Yeah.
That was, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. You know, that's what it comes down to is that was their perfect opportunity. So it's not coming down from 3-1. It's just... none of those first five were really like, oh, you know, buzzer beater, like the way, you know, Oklahoma City had to scramble for most of the games to beat San Antonio.
So in terms of how memorable it was, you would put it kind of in the top five, top 10, you know, right there. I mean, this was a moment of truth for Golden State. Let's be serious. I mean, I brought this up in a chat and I sort of got a little bit of a rebuffing from it, but this is kind of the first time that Golden State really had to face a legitimately good team. I'm not saying that they ducked good opponents throughout for the last 2 years. And I mentioned that Chicago and LA basically faced every tough opponent they could possibly face and got through them and won their championships. But for Golden State, this was the first, like, I mean, elite team that they had to play, if you ask me.
Well... yes, and
I understand the mentality. You play who's in front of you, but you know what I'm saying?
You play who's in front of you, but really, how different was Oklahoma City than Portland was? You had two guards who just dominated, and then since Oklahoma City had better forwards, you know, they were able to take them to him physically, whereas that's how Portland ultimately melted. But
I think the difference was that Oklahoma City was a team that by game four, you legitimately thought, okay, this team can beat that team. I never.
Yeah, that was even, the even, okay.
Even Cleveland in the finals, I never thought. I thought LeBron James could carry this team all the way to Game 7, but I never thought they could win. I didn't think they could beat the Warriors.
Yeah, it was the okay. Game 1 wasn't a fluke, and you know maybe San Antonio didn't melt and beat themselves as everybody thought they did. You know, it was. As much as, you know, I don't like them, and as much as everybody else is like, oh, this is just, you know, everybody, they got lucky, Oklahoma City, by, you know, everyone sort of losing around them. Yeah, okay, maybe we were all wrong.
What percentage would you put with the Thunder having a meltdown in Game 6, which cost them the series, or the Warriors just being incredibly resilient, showing the heart of a champion? Like, how much of that would you put on the Warriors' resolve or the Thunder just crashing and burning, basically?
I would say it would be more on the Thunder crashing and burning, as we've seen that year in and year out. We saw with the Clippers last year with their epic, just, you know.
And we've seen it multiple times this year from the Thunder in the regular season.
Yeah, so it's just one of those, like, good, you know, championship teams find ways to win. So, yes, they have the talent, so, you know, it's not 100 to 0%, but at the same time, you need to, if you're up and you're at home and then you just fall apart the way they did, you know, it's that's nothing.
Yeah, well, and not only that, it was just how badly they played in the fourth quarter. They didn't even record an assist. It was a little bit of a reminder of what the Clippers did against the Rockets. The difference there was that the Rockets played almost perfect basketball in that fourth quarter and the Clippers played like horrible, whereas the Thunder in the fourth quarter, they were bad, but the Warriors had, like we just said, the Warriors had to play almost perfect to win. You know, well, now from two-point range, they were really bad the whole game. They got out-rebounded, and the only thing that was really bailing them out was Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Thompson and Curry were making their threes. Nobody else was. So, you know, did it become a super-reliant individual effort from between, you know, the Durant-Westbrook pairing and the Curry-Thompson pairing? Yeah, and Thompson and Curry won that out, whereas Durant and Westbrook kind of choked. I mean, let's put the right word there.
You know, it was like when you had texted me, like, oh, you know, Westbrook only had 5 turnovers, but it was like, yeah, the fourth quarter, he just disappeared, and he just tried to run into everybody, and just looked lost at the end, and then, you know, Durant's inbound, lackadaisical inbound pass to Steph Curry.
Yeah, remember when he was laughing in the press conference about how Curry is how Curry's not like might not be a great at theft artist, that he kind of he only steals balls if they're deflected. Well, Curry straight up stole that one. You know, now the game is already out of reach for the most because of the one-legged banker that he got over Ibaka, which was an incredibly difficult shot. But that game six is the kind of game that you talk about forever. I think it's the kind of game that will, I mean, we'll talk about that, the Thunder when we get a chance in a future episode a little bit more elaborately. But I think that's the kind of loss that will haunt the Thunder forever, maybe forever.
I don't think forever. It wasn't again to the Clippers level of falling apart.
That was Mario Ellie. I thought that was what's another example. I thought that was Tim Thomas hitting the three against the Lakers. You know, it's one of those ones where that team, the way it's constituted, you can't get any further than that, and it just haunts you. It just haunts you.
Well, that's the same thing, you know, as the 80s and 90s with the Bulls. It was, you know, and the Celtics and Lakers. It was just, well, you could be as good as you want to do, but as long as there's that team, there's always somebody who's better.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go ahead and move on to the real matchup, the NBA Finals. Now, how eventual did all this feel at the end of the day? Because when you look at it, it's the one seed versus the one seed.
Well, in the end, this is what, you know, we, in theory, could have recorded this a month ago and saved ourselves some time.
Could have recorded this in November.
You know, because this is what we all expected. This is what happened. You know, it took a little longer to get there. But at the same time, this is the two teams who were, you know, you had the all-time single season record. Then you had the team, you know, the most expensive team.
And then Curry winning unanimous MVP in the comments that, you know, what did you think about those comments from LeBron? Bit of a backhanded compliment?
Well, this is yes and no, because, you know, probably in his mind, LeBron's like, well, I too could have been. You know, how come I didn't get a vote? And,
yeah.
You know, it's, well, look what I did for my team. They would be nowhere without me. And
a little bit of grandstanding, sure.
Yeah, and this is my sixth time in a row being in the finals and blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh. But it's going to feel like an epic encounter for sure. And the biggest difference, obviously, between the Cavaliers and the Warriors as they face off in the NBA Finals, which is going to be starting on Thursday, is it? June the 5th? Or is it June the 2nd?
Thursday,
June the 2nd, which will start in Oracle, obviously, with the Golden State, you know, going to be having home court advantage over basically every opponent that they were possibly going to play. Do you kind of feel like the Cavaliers were secretly hoping it would be the Thunder?
Of course.
Because the home Cavaliers, court advantage?
It's not home court advantage. The Cavaliers, I think, could beat the Thunder easily.
Yeah, LeBron, I think, has that in the back of his mind. I've beaten Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook before. I could do it again.
He's beaten them. Plus, he also has Kevin Love and, you know, size that, as good as Steven Adams and, you know, Enes Kanter and Ibaka are, well, you're not going to go, you know, put them on the three-point line guarding Kevin Love.
Now, this is a tale of two teams, obviously. Very, very different in style. Outside of three-point shooting, where all of a sudden, they've become highly similar, but that's the point. Is it a tale of two teams, or is it a tale of two seasons between the regular season with all the tumultuousness that Cleveland had with changing their coaches and everything coming up Millhouse, I guess, to steal a phrase for the Warriors and Curry, and then in the postseason where Golden State struggled, lost a handful of games, had to kind of come back from the dead to just get to the NBA Finals, and then Cleveland cruised and is playing their best basketball. Is it kind of a tale of two seasons?
Typical answer, yes and no. Mm-hmm. It's a tale of two seasons because once the playoffs happens, nobody cares how you got there. Everybody's 0-0, and that's why you play the best of seven, and that's why you have, you know, and it, not this year, but, you know, you've had 8 seeds beat 1 seeds, and you've had upsets and all that, but at the same time, everything came up Millhouse, but if Golden State had to play Detroit and Atlanta, they too would have blown through just as easily.
Well, you know, they said that about Portland, and they lost the game, and they said that about Houston, and they lost the game. Now, Curry was injured for the games that they lost. You know, he didn't play at all in Game 3 against Houston, I believe. That was the one where Harden hit the game winner. And then he didn't play at all in Game 3 against Portland when Lillard went off and they won that game. He came back and they won the overtime game in Game 4. But they've had so many close shaves, even with Curry in the lineup. He has not shot the ball too well. His regular averages were 50% from overall, and then from the three-point line is 45%. He's like around, like in the early, like in the lower 40% on both sides. I mean, that Thunder series really took a lot out of him in terms of field goal percentage. He shot very he was just very inefficient until we got to game five when elimination was on the line, and it's like it's almost like the lights sort of clicked back on for Curry.
I wouldn't say that. It's just there's a difference when it's regular season and nobody cares if you're taking 45-foot, you know, half-court three-pointers and you're making everything because nobody's really playing defense. So now, you know, every possession is a different one. We haven't, you know, Draymond Green disappeared. Harrison Barnes has been utterly useless.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just they've just been relying on their two superstars for the whole time. And, you know, that's it gets a lot more difficult, which I sort of forget when you go 70, you know, 72 and or whatever.
Let's look at momentum here. We've seen 3-1 series deficits overcome before. The one team that won the championship overcoming 3-1, I believe, was the Rockets in 95. And now, but that was in the second round when they eliminated the Suns. They had to beat the Spurs to get to the finals, and they swept the Magic. It has not happened in the conference finals, I believe, or it happened when Boston did it to Philadelphia in 1981, you know, in Larry Bird's second year in the league. It basically, long story short, it's super duper rare that you see a 3-1 series deficit overcome in the conference finals. So what kind of momentum can you take from that, judging from historical data?
You can take the momentum of, you know, the high that you made it, but at the same time, you're just depleted. So you're hoping that mental energy translates over. But
yeah, the idea like, okay, we won 3 in a row. Now we got to win 2 more in a row. You know, that is kind of daunting mentally. I think you have a good point there.
The only thing that really, you know, favors them is they got rid of that stupid 2-3-2.
Mm-hmm.
So if Cleveland had stolen one in you know, Golden State, they're now really trouble because
I always called it jail. I always called it that three, like if you blow one of those home games in the finals, that 3-game stretch is like, I always called it jail. You know, like I remember, this is a long time ago, and the Pistons in 2004 were probably a better TEAM team anyway than the Lakers, but it felt like the Lakers were in jail. You know, and it almost felt like that way with Golden State in that Oklahoma City series, but they got that. They didn't have the 2-3-2 in that series either. They got the game five to get their momentum back slightly, and then in game six, Oklahoma City sort of buckled.
Well, that's the thing, is it's you're at home, you're up in the fourth quarter. There's really, you know, no excuses for that. Golden State, they didn't really win the game. They didn't, you know, hit every shot and, you know, go 10 for 10 at the end. It was just meltdown.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about the momentum that you could take from being down 3-1. So now you're thinking, okay, now nobody's going to be as because even if we were to, the only way we would lose is if we were down 3-0, because that's impossible to come back from. We could be down 3-1 to Cleveland and still come back. I guess that's just one of those alternative mindsets that you can use if that situation is what happens to the Warriors. It's unlikely. I'm not saying it's impossible that Cleveland can't do that to the Warriors, because this Cleveland team in this rematch is how much more formidable are they versus the Warriors than they were last season. Now, let's be honest, the Warriors really took it to them in the Christmas game and the Martin Luther King Day game, and that was actually the last game that David Blatt coached. That was the tipping point where they fired Blatt and they brought in Tyronn Lue to run the team. But how much different will it be with Cleveland as an opponent versus what they were last season?
It'll be a world of difference, because we watched the, you know, we watched the Christmas game, which was just awful. And, you know, Cleveland tried to beat Golden State, and they tried to, that's what happens, is they fall in the trap of, well, we need to beat them by playing as them. And
but isn't that what they've done to everyone in the East? Bombing everyone from the three-point line?
Well, now they're realizing they can play that way, as opposed to, you know, we need to play them as them. Now they're just saying, well, we can hit threes too. Let's get into a comfortable rhythm. Let's, you know, train and let's practice and let's use, you know, as I said before, let's use these series as sparring sessions. And you notice with Toronto, they didn't shoot threes 40, 50 times like they did the first two rounds.
Yeah, well, they had that one game three where I think they got desperate because they weren't shooting the ball well from two anyway. And anytime you don't shoot the ball well early and you get down big, you start to sort of retreat to the line. And we've seen that. I mean, even Golden State, who's a great ball movement team, even they get a little lackadaisical with, okay, we're kind of desperate here. Let's just start launching threes. And that was the only time I really saw that out of Cleveland, and they suffered for it because they lost badly to Toronto in that game. But there is something different about Cleveland. And the other great deception about when you watch Cleveland and you try to figure them out is the idea like, oh, well, if we try to speed them up or play fast, then Cleveland can't keep up with us because they're a slow team. But that's not true.
It's a different team now. They're not relying on, you know, Mozgov as the center and Thompson. It's, you know, you got Kevin Love back. You have Channing Frye, who's just going to shoot threes anyways. So.
Yeah, and Thompson's immobile, but Kevin Love's okay on that secondary break. And obviously, you got one of the quickest point guards on God's green earth in Kyrie Irving. Irving has played. I think that's the most underrated part about the whole Cleveland storyline. Irving has been elite as a point guard in the Eastern Conference playoffs from probably, I would probably say, from beginning to end. I don't really remember one game where he really struggled, except for game three where everybody struggled.
Well, he's just been solid. And, you know, again, let's think back to last year. It was just Dalyadova getting minutes. It's like, why?
He had the two good games in game two and three against Curry in last year's finals, and then Curry and Kerr started to kind of figure out ways to get Curry free, and then Dellavedova, just even on contested shots, Dellavedova couldn't do anything against Curry, and he got big head mode, and that was it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a different team. The fact is they're healthy this year, and there's nobody who's banged up, and, you know, this is the team. You know, these are what, the first and third most expensive teams. They're both in the luxury tax, so these are what this is what they're built for. This is the way it's supposed to be. They bought themselves the finals.
Obviously, next year with the Warriors, like as we'll be talking about for their, you know, when we do Netflix and chill with the West teams, it might look a little different for the Warriors. Whereas with the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're locked in. I mean, I don't think anybody on that team is going to be leaving. I don't think LeBron will opt out for more money like he might next year too. But I don't see him leaving. Leaving Cleveland would be stupid. So, you know, these guys might be in a deadlock for, you know, competing for championships for maybe another year or two. So this might not, even though this is the second time they played each other, and finals rematches do happen a lot, but they're always, that second one is always interesting because, you know, I know the Bulls got the Jazz twice. In 97 and 98. And I'm trying to remember another situation where we basically got the same result in back-to-back finals. But a lot of times that second one is vastly different from the first one.
Well, yeah, again, there's a big difference of being the champion and, okay, we need to repeat, as opposed to that team that's more hungry and revenge is on their mind.
Do you think revenge is going to be on LeBron's mind?
Of course. He, you know, every interview, he just, you know, he feels slighted, you know, somewhat that he didn't get a vote for, you know, MVP, and everybody's, you know, Golden State this and Golden State that, and, you know,
should the Warriors be worried about the fact that their bread and butter in the regular season, what made them so great and what still makes them great, is their three-point shooting, their field goal percentage overall, and, you know, how well they move the ball, which is, and, I mean, let's be honest, I mean, alongside the Spurs, they're the best ball movement team in the league. But Cleveland has shot the ball better, you know, overall and from the three-point line throughout the playoffs. Do you think that should be worrisome for the Golden State, that a team might shoot the ball better in Oracle in one of those two games in Golden State, that Cleveland might actually shoot the ball better than they do, which might put Golden State on their heels, and then LeBron goes to work with that post play, slowing things down?
I don't think so, because Cleveland doesn't, you know, Golden State's known for their ball movement, and they're the ones, you know, who you know, like the Harlem Globetrotters passing around the court, and then you just, oh, he's open.
Yeah.
Cleveland is just more methodical as pass, okay, now we're going to shoot. There's no, like, we're just going to keep, you know, making everybody run in circles.
And they have great individual one-on-one players in terms of getting their – making shots, you know. Curry and Thompson obviously were making impossible shots, too. They're all-stars, you know. One's a league MVP. They're supposed to do that if that's what their ultimate skill is. But J.R. Smith, Kyrie Irving, even Kevin Love, you know, on some of those little, you know, when he kind of does the little move and the step back and the pump fakes, they're all really good at getting open, and they're all really good at making tough shots.
They are, and, you know, they're all healthy. They're not banged up, and, you know, Kevin Love's not limping up the court and lagging behind. Everybody's running on full cylinders, whereas Golden State, they're a little, you know, dinged up with Curry and Bogut, and they're a little more fragile than last year.
The injury questions surrounding Steph Curry, because I think we're basically free of any injury questions involving Cleveland outside of maybe Kevin Love having issues with that knee in the middle of the Raptor series.
Yeah.
With Curry and with the knee and then in the ankle too, and then Bogut, do you have any worries after coming off of the Oklahoma City series?
Well, yeah, they can't afford to lose anybody. It's just, you know, they can't run small like they did last year since Cleveland added, you know, Channing Frye and, again, Love's healthy with Roshan Thompson and, you know, LeBron's going to play the four anyways, so.
Yeah. Now, remember, that was the series where the finals last year, that was the series where Golden State got a for the first time pretty much all year, they got a little desperate, and Kerr switched the lineup so that Andre Iguodala started. It was an inspired move. Iguodala played great defensively against LeBron, and he actually wound up winning the finals MVP. Iguodala, similarly, in the lineup of death, which had gotten – they were getting murdered by the Thunder if you looked at the plus-minus throughout that series until that second half in Game 6 where Iguodala was closing in on Durant – forcing steals, getting transition, making a couple of timely baskets. Do you see that with LeBron this year again in the finals? Do you think LeBron's got something up his sleeve?
Well, he should have something up his sleeve because last year LeBron was just him trying to will everybody through. This year, all right, you're going to put Iguodala on me. I'm just going to be that power forward and just back you down, make you play down in the block.
Can you believe he didn't have a 30-point game in the playoffs until Game 6 against Toronto?
There was no need to. I think this was the difference between, you know, the last year and this year is let everyone else score their points too, as opposed to me being the guy who needs to have the ball and have everything run through me. I can just be there on the court, hit my shots. I could be part of the team as opposed to the team being part of me.
How much of a difference in terms of the offensive makeup is it between what we saw, you know, minus Irving for most of the series and minus Love, with LeBron running a lot of stuff, doing a lot of ball handling, obviously, you know, because you can't have Iman Shumpert pushing up the ball, Matthew Dellavedova pushing up the ball in every possession. It slows things down a little too much. And then versus what we saw this year, you know, with Kyrie Irving just being really good at running things, it allows LeBron to explore in the post, find his spot in the elbow, maybe get a little bit deeper in position so he get to all those easy baskets like he did early in that series against Toronto. How much of a difference are we going to see in terms of the offensive mindset? They can play a little faster. They can get in transition if they force turnovers, which that has been Golden State's probably their biggest bugaboo in this whole postseason, is that they turn the ball over a lot. What I'm just saying is that do you see a change in philosophy versus what we saw last year offensively?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. You said LeBron can find his spot. When you're running the point, you can't find your spot because you're too busy trying to make sure everybody else is getting where they need to be. Mm-hmm. So with Kyrie running, you know, he could just, okay, maybe I'll be down low, maybe I'll the elbow, like you said. This year, it should be a different beast. However, if Curry's going to hit 13 threes and if Klay's going to hit 10, it doesn't matter what Cleveland sends at them.
What's a tougher task, getting up to about 110 or 115 points in Golden State or getting to about 105, 110 points in Cleveland? What's a tougher task right now?
The tougher task is at home.
Well, they're both at home. That's the thing.
Well, I meant in Cleveland.
Okay. So you think Cleveland is harder because defensively they get a little more locked in than Golden State does?
Yeah, because Golden State, it's just, well, let's just all shoot threes and it's just run around and we'll start slowing it down in the fourth quarter. But for the most part, it's just free-for-all.
But their field goal percentage defense is still excellent. They're at 42% now, which is like 30 percentage points better than Cleveland in the postseason. They're second in steals and blocks. The only team that I think that was better in blocks and steals in the postseason was that incredibly long Oklahoma City team that just started to, like, it was almost like they spread their wings all of a sudden, started to fly. You know, they was like all of a sudden they had all these arms up against Golden, you know, in Golden State, and there's, you know, some of their smaller guards were just having trouble getting open, finding creases, noticing that passing lanes were just getting plugged up. It was harder to move the ball. But I mean, somehow they were still able to get through that series with a victory. But defensively, percentage-wise, Warriors are still a lot better than Cleveland, but that's still, it's deceptive because Cleveland can still slow you down.
It's funny how we're talking as if almost Golden State's the underdog in this series.
Would you consider them the underdog here?
No.
So you like the Golden State Warriors here?
As much as on paper they you know, they lose the size battle, they lose the physicality battle, you can't stop 25 three-pointers if that's what happens. And, you know, if Harrison Barnes shows up and hits five and Draymond hits five and they all start shooting, they got on a hot streak early and all of a sudden Golden State scores 40 in the first quarter, there's nothing you can really come back because they're already hot and they're not going to be stopped.
I disagree. I think Cleveland's the type of team where you could get 30 or 40 points on them in a quarter and they still might survive it. That's because they're a really resilient team and they're I don't know if they're definitely not as good defensively in terms of explosiveness and athleticism as, you know, LeBron's Miami's teams were, but in terms of turning things around, no one is better than them. No one is better than Cleveland.
There's nobody better, but at the same time, you're down five. Okay, that might lead to one desperate possession here, one desperate possession there. And it's a lot harder to play from behind against a hot team as opposed to just, you know, waiting for them to start missing, as opposed to just, this is what happened, like I said, on Christmas, is you wind up playing two Warriors into the Warriors game, and you play into their mindset, and then you've lost the battle because now they've got you.
Okay, these might be easy answers, but we're going to wrap this up. Kyrie Irving, obviously a good addition versus last year, right? Instead of having Dellavedova, Iman Shumpert be ball handlers.
Let's see, a top five point guard versus somebody who's bottom two?
But it turns game one into a bit of a Zapruder film, because now you're staring down that game film because you got a full game of Kyrie Irving, because remember, he got injured in the overtime and they put Klay Thompson on him because Kyrie defensively played well against Curry in that game. You know, a lot of people malign Kyrie Irving for his, you know, his pick and roll defense, his ability to stop people, but you know, he's been doing well for the most part in this postseason, and defensively against Curry, he did not play badly in that one game, okay? Now, Kevin Love, we don't really have much there. What do you see? Who's going to be guarding him? Will it be Draymond Green chasing him around?
Yeah, it'll be Draymond.
Then what do you wind up doing with Tristan Thompson? Because Maurice Spates and Andrew Bogut starts, but he's only been averaging about...
Tristan Thompson? He's not going to hit anything but layups and putbacks anyways.
But that, you see, that's the thing that killed him against Oklahoma City almost. They gave up so many offensive rebounds.
But that's what you're going to have to do in order to put, you know, you put Harrison Barnes on LeBron to start, and then once things start falling, all right, you got to put Iguodala on him.
Yeah, that is an X. I know you're not a fan of him, but that's an X factor to me for Golden State. I don't think Cleveland has a positional answer for Barnes on the defensive end. That's, I think, the one thing that Golden State has that I don't think Cleveland has a definitive answer to.
Well, they don't have an answer for Barnes or really Green, because LeBron's not going to keep up with him anymore.
No, I think Love's going to chase him around a little bit.
Love will chase him around, but you can't do that all day, every day.
Because you don't want Love in foul trouble. And Draymond,
you don't want him in foul trouble. You don't want him getting tired and getting lazy and sloppy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the thing is, you know, Golden State can run small if they need to, whereas, you know, like the same thing as Oklahoma City is, Cleveland still has to go big.
Will Andre Iguodala start a single game in this finals?
Yeah. Probably.
Which means that there's some sort of a turning of the screw here where Golden State might lose a home game and they get a hint of desperation.
It all comes down to game three. I think we're, if Cleveland... Golden State should easily win at home games one and two as expected, because that's what you do at home. And then game three, how do you play on the road? If you get blown out on the road, then okay, we got a long series. So I could see maybe game five or game six, I might need to tinker with it if it's 2-2 and all the games have been blowouts and Cleveland seems stronger than usual. And
This is LeBron James' 7th NBA Finals. It's his 6th in a row. He obviously had that incredible statistical performance last season. We detailed throughout this episode why we don't think statistically we're going to see the same thing, probably because physically it's impossible. But he also has a lot more weapons around him that can help him instead of having to just go into isolation mode, get his usage rate stupid high like that. Is there anything to speak or to add to LeBron James's legacy, whether it be negative or positive, based on this one NBA Finals? Like, is there anything to be figured out about LeBron James, or are we kind of in a position already where
we already know everything how it is. It does absolutely nothing. Now it's just, he's reached 6 in a row. I don't think anybody cares.
But if he loses, that's your 2-5 now.
Well, if you lose, you lost to Golden State, and the story will be Golden State, had the all-time greatest season of all time. That will be the story. Nobody's going to care about, which again, will add, the fuel to the fire of him feeling slighted, but they're going to talk about Golden State winning, not Cleveland losing, because nobody really talks about the losers.
Mm-hmm. Unless LeBron James is on the team, then everybody talks about it.
Because that's what people ask, but in the end, it's just, you lost to Golden State. Golden State, you won all these games, and I did. You now challenge the Jordan team, and you'll have all the, 20 years down the line, you'll hear Festus Ezeli, oh yeah, we could beat the 2035, Miami Heat. We would have been way better than that. It's like, shut up.
You mean the 2035 Minnesota Timberwolves, when Tom Thibodeau's won 6 NBA championships with Wiggins, Towns, and is some other guy I haven't mentioned yet.
The 80-year-old Tom Thibodeau.
If Steph Curry wins the championship and wins Finals MVP, is this the greatest individual season in NBA history?
Of course.
By, not even close? Like, even better than...
Not even close. There's as much as you could say about Jordan as better... as Jordan is way better than Curry was, because... Jordan was a complete player. Curry's just a shooter, but
yeah, there's LeBron in 2013. There's Wilt the 1 year he won it in Philadelphia. There's a bunch of them, obviously, but Curry with being the unanimous MVP, which is a writer's award, so who the fuck cares about that? But just the fact that his efficiency was so much better than everyone else, he was a scoring champion, all that jazz. It kind of adds up to where you're right in that argument, and into that debate.
When you set the 3-point all-time record in, February?
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, we get it. You're the man.
Any X factors from either side? Somebody that we haven't even mentioned where you would say, that guy might do something that'll turn this around?
The X factor to me for Cleveland has to be J.R. Smith. If he disappears, they're kind of sunk. Because he's their only shooter, and if he starts, getting all...
Look at the scoring. LeBron's at 24 points along with the 8 rebounds and 7 assists and 2 steals. I mean, everyone's talking about how ho-hum LeBron James has been in terms of his offense. I mean, he's averaging 24 points, almost 9 rebounds and 7 assists and 2 steals. I mean, that ain't too bad, Kyrie's at 24 points. Kevin Love's at 17. JR is at 12 points a game. And then it goes down to Tristan Thompson at 5 points a game. So... you definitely need him to pick, keep at his rate with the 46% from 3 in the postseason.
That's basically, because if he's he'll take 10, 15 threes probably.
And in terms of salary, he's one of the best value guys in the league. Him and Jay Crowder in Boston.
He's a bargain because he's a head case, and this is really sort of the first year he's been like, we haven't heard from him, but every other year it's just like, that's why he's only getting paid $5 million and he opted out and nobody wanted him.
Yeah, you mentioned you mentioned a Cleveland Cavalier and J.R. Smith. You know, I already talked about Harrison Barnes, but another guy I think I got to bring up, if Festus Ezeli can play well and expand his minutes, that can neutralize the presence of Tristan Thompson, and they can't throw that extra hat of playing Mozgov if they want to go big.
Well, they need Festus Ezeli to do really something because, you know,
he was awful in the Oklahoma City series. Every lineup that he was in, their plus-minus was in the negative against Oklahoma City.
But between him and Spites, you know, Azili's better, and you can't have Bogut out there, you know, the entire time. So you need a big at some point. And, you know, you need him to step up, but...
Yeah, and they're a great they're a better rebounding team than Cleveland is. So, you know, if there's a chance for the Warriors to out-rebound somebody, it'll be here in the finals because Oklahoma City was just surrounding them with bigs like Steven Adams and Serge Ibaka and even Andre Robertson, who's an oversized two. You know, they were all just giving them tons of trouble on the boards. Finally, they'll have a team where they can kind of outmaneuver them to try to get some good team rebounding going. But we'll see there. How many games does this go?
Six.
I'll say Golden State wins in five. I think they'll take one in Cleveland, and then they'll finish them off in game five.
I would say Golden State in six. It'll be more competitive than...
I mean, with all this Believeland stuff going on with the ESPN, how bitter would it be if Golden State celebrates on Cleveland's court again?
That's what I'm sort of expecting that to happen. It's just, you know, with the Believeland and... all Steph all the time. It's just there's a reason, you know, I've stopped watching ESPN. It's just I can avoid all this extraneous BS on the finals.
Yeah, but it's not like, oh, look at these chippy underdog Cleveland Cavaliers. They were the front runners like all year long in the East. It's just that now they're playing the team that they're supposed to lose to. So they do become the underdog, to answer the question you asked earlier.
They become the underdog, but we're not talking about it. Everyone's talking about how this is finally Cleveland's year. So, again, you know, we shall see. It should be an entertaining series. Hopefully it's not all blowouts every game.
I think with the three-point shooting alone, it'll be entertaining. I don't know about how distant some of the leads will be or some of the margins of victory will be. I think we're going to see a few blowouts.
Yeah, but again... Hopefully, you know, it comes down to Cleveland needs to win at Oakland to set the tone. If they get sort of blown out the first two games, all right, now we sort of see, you know, we can see where we're going.
Where do you put this Cleveland team among the Miami teams that LeBron had? Better than any of them? Or was 2013 still better?
Well, 2013 was still better because all you could do is compare Wade and Bosch to Love and... Mm-hmm. Love and Irving.
And the fact that they eliminated the Spurs, who never lose in the finals. You know, they got that feather in their cap, too.
Mm-hmm. And this one just seems like, as good as this team is, it just seems like a copy. It's not the original.
If they beat the Warriors, though, I mean, like, I think we talked about this in another show when we were previewing previous rounds. Wouldn't it be just so LeBron James to just shit in everybody's coffee and ruin Steph Curry's great MVP season and ruined Golden State season? Because for the Thunder to be in that position was weird because people liked the Thunder. They kind of wanted – when it started to happen that they might win the series, people were like, yeah, this is fun. But if LeBron does it, it's different.
That's what I was hearing too, is just like, you know, Golden State. Everyone's like, Golden State again? Oh, I'm getting kind of sick of them. And, well, that's what happened to you. You know, you report on them 24-7. It's just like, you know, why not give Oklahoma City?
Because, Adam, nobody likes a bandwagon. Nobody does.
I don't know. It's not bandwagon. It's just wall-to-wall. You can't get away from it.
Yeah. But that'll be wrapping up this episode. Any takeaways before we close out our preview of the NBA finale?
Nope.
What you thought of our final countdown intro?
Wunderbar.
Were you waiting for what's that Allstate commercial where they're like waiting for something to finish in the microwave and they're playing it?
Oh, that,
what's the name of that band, too?
The Muppets one with Fozzie Bear?
No. The one, not Allstate, I'm sorry. It's Geico. When the guy is like turning they're waiting for the microwave, and the guy's playing Final Countdown. The actual singers of Final Countdown.
Oh, Europe, Final Countdown?
That's Europe. Okay, okay. Yeah, so because every year we do the Final Countdown for the NBA Finals. Where do you see the ratings? I mean, the thing about the ratings is that the familiarity for casual viewers really lends to it because it gives them continuity. It gets more people into it because somebody is more familiar with it, and they're like, oh, I'll watch it too if you're watching it. I think the ratings might be a record this year compared to the last 10 years, because last year's were record-setting in their own way.
They're record-setting, but in the end, how many people are really watching? You're not going to get 30, 40 million people. You're not going to...
No, but the Warriors have been must-see TV in terms of the ratings.
They've been must-see TV, but you're still going to get, 20 million. You're not going to get... It's not going to go up exponentially because... to the two teams.
We might see a 10% rise in some of the games 2 and 3.
Yeah, but that goes from what, 15 to 17 million?
It never tops what you saw with Michael and NBC in the late 90s, where they were having the Last Dance and game 6 against Utah got something like a 25. That's impossible. That is almost impossible to match. This would have to go 7 games to pull that off.
It was, and also back then it was Michael, there was less channels. Now people are just like, well, I'm going to go, you push it back to June. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go out and enjoy my evening now. I don't need to sit and watch.
Do you like the early start to the for the month for the finals now?
I don't know why. It's June and we still haven't started. We just get later and later.
But we're finally starting it now, so everybody enjoy it. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Enjoy the finals.